Extra Points is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. It must be 21 years or older.
The Combine, done. NHL trade deadline, near. March Madness, almost here. Movie week is here. Hi and hello and welcome to the new episode of Extra Points presented as ever by Omaha. Let's talk about all of it, including the most important sport of them all, the game of life, and that does include the offshoot called movies. I do want to get to all things sports. We see in the NBA, the Celtics are rolling. It looks like, per Kevin Hench on the most recent episode of Minus Three, he says it's going to be the Nugs and the Celts. Much debate about what quarterback belongs well in the QB league. Like I say, let's talk about that. But you know what? We're going to keep our focus on the puck once again as Sarah Tiana tries to sink her teeth in to the NHL. Tiana, how are you? How was your week?
My week has been great. Yeah, everything has been great. I've been trying to watch a little bit more hockey, you know, obviously keeping up with the Kings. But then talking a lot of hockey because my friend who's coming on with us today is an inspiration for all of hockey.
It's awesome. Yes, indeed, he is. He's Jamie McLennan, and he came to see you. How good a friend is he? He came to your place of business, a.k.a. the Comedy Store, on Tuesday night to check you out. Now he's paying you a visit to the sports podcast where we'll have some fun. Before we jump into some hockey talk and otherwise, quick question for you, Sarah Tiana, this being movie week, the Oscars on Sunday night. All any right. Deep thoughts there? Any upset picks you wish to offer? Do you think it goes pretty chalk and Oppenheimer sweeps out?
I mean, have you seen Oppenheimer?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was so on board with Barbie, just like as a woman, but just as a fan of the doll growing up, and just like the ingenious of like creating that world. And then I saw Oppenheimer and I was like, whoa, like this was, it was like the way that story was told through, you know, like skipping ahead in time. And, you know, I was just like, I was in awe as a screenwriter. I was completely in awe of the mastery that was created to make that movie. Although I think I wish Saltburn was a little in there. I was really a big fan of Saltburn.
I didn't like that at all. Oh, I agree with everything you just said about Oppenheimer v. Barbie, Oppenheimer and Barbie, two legit gems that'll, I suspect a decade from now, we'll look back on and say, boy, those really were two really strong movies. Saltburn was talented.
I thought Saltburn had an American Psycho vibe to me, and I was such a huge American Psycho fan. And I really, really enjoyed it. A movie that I really enjoyed this year that didn't get any love that I thought should have was Somewhere in Queens, Ray Romano's movie. I thought that was like a really brilliant story, beautifully told. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure everything is going to go, you know, the way that it did with the Globes, it usually does, like, because it, you know, these are all campaigns. These are all, you know, it's not like the universe is voting. It's
and are you hosting this year when is that happening already?
Am I hosting?
Yeah. At some point soon, at least, right?
I should at least be writing jokes for them.
Or at least hosting the Globes. Or, I mean, the People's Choice.
Seems
minimum.
Like they'll let anybody host the Globes. You know, I'll be the 57th call.
So before we get to McLennan here to talk some puck, I'm trying to think of the better thing to do, sports movies or just straight up win, play, show. Sarah Tiana, best three movies of the 21st century. Kevin Hench, Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass there. And by the way, Eddie Spaghetti is keeping laser focus on the NHL trade deadline about 48 hours from the time that the deadline hits here. Keep us apprised of all that goes down, Eddie Spaghetti. In the meantime, what were Hench's picks? He included The Hangover. This is a good person to ask, a comedy writer as well. He says The Hangover isn't the best comedy of the millennium, but is one of the two best movies of the millennium. I say I can name five comedies funnier than that one.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it was good. I don't think I would put it up there.
I agree. Good, but overrated.
Yeah, I think I'm not a fan of like showing penises in movies to like get a laugh. I always find that was like my least favorite part of Step Brothers. And I think Step Brothers was by far funnier than The Hangover.
I agree with you about wieners as a comedic device. Yeah. And, you know,
low hanging fruit, literally.
Yeah. And comedic device, some might call, you know, certain men's parts anyway, a comedic device. And, that's like me. I'm even more weird about that. I don't like it when old ladies give the middle finger. That's a big punchline in people, like something weird happens and like, oh my God, that frail old lady, how's she going to react? And then she extends the middle finger slowly to camera and oh, the guffaws. I'm like, it's crude. I don't like seeing that. I don't want to see that. Right.
The same with kids when they do that. You're like, all right. Yeah, I get it.
Tiana gets
like,
it.
That kid didn't actually say that. Like, he's been coached to say that by an acting coach.
Oh, when
like,
I was on the Man Show Boy, whispering in the ISB to the Man Show Boy. You remember that? The little kid who would go up to ladies and say inappropriate things. I was on the mic feeding him lines once, a couple times. Anyway, go ahead now.
I bought you some.
What were they again, Spaghetti? So it was The Hangover?
Well, he said his favorite movie was Michael Clayton.
Michael Clayton won.
And then The Hangover, and then the other comedy.
Tropic Thunder, right?
Yeah, that does sound right. Yes.
That's a terrible list. So see if you can improve upon that, Tiana.
Well, I mean, I used to get in trouble in film school all the time because my favorite movie of all time is Top Gun. I think your favorite movie should be one that you can watch. That's a remote drop. Like,
good for
it's
you.
On, I'm going to watch it. So I would say Top Gun, Tombstone, really high up there for me, and probably Major League.
I watched Major League last night.
I'm stopping. Yeah.
I couldn't believe I found that there are so many movies. Well, that's a fun list we should make in the future is like the movies that if you stumble on them, like people love to attribute that charm to a lot of movies. They're like, oh, if I find it, I'll just say, but you won't though. It's the thing about I've been arguing this week with like Tarantino has a higher batting average with his movies than Scorsese does. And that sounds like a hot take to people, but then people go like, oh, but Taxi Driver is a classic. Age of Innocence. Like, you're going to watch
How many times can you watch Taxi Driver? You know what I mean?
Right. Like, Taxi Driver's a gem, but go watch it. Do you want to sit through the second act of Taxi Driver? Trust me, you don't. You want to watch Inglourious Basterds all the way through every time you stumble across.
All the way. I mean, and you can watch... You could watch Pulp Fiction twice in the time it takes you to watch Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes. And The Irishman. Boy, yeah. You can watch Reservoir Dogs 24 times. All right. You know what? Interesting thoughts from Tia. So wait, did we get your full list? Yeah. So this is a Tombstone.
My favorite line of all time is in that movie when they go, are you Doc Holliday? And he goes, well, that's the rumor. My favorite line of all time. Like says everything about that character in one line. Well, that's the rumor.
Boy, he is dynamite in that picture. Ain't he great in that one? All right, listen, good times, but more good times await as we now jump into some hot hockey talk here at the NHL trade deadline with Jamie McLennan. Let me squeeze in a quick break here.
You know, when the conversation turns Stampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right. I am very excited about this one. This fella played for six NHL teams, plus Magnitogorsk. Pittsburgh Penguins fans know that from number 71, Geno Malkin. I remember this guy best, along with Manny Fernandez, as the Minnesota Wild 1-2 punch between the pipes in their inaugural season back in aught, right? Aught one, whatever you call it. He won the Masterson back in 98 for dedication to the game. And just last weekend, he presented his old pal Mika Kiprusoff, who had his jersey hoisted up to the rafters in Calgary. He is now a TSN analyst. He's Jamie McLennan. What's happening, man? Thanks for the time.
Not much. Just, man, you're listing awesome things. I mean, if I had like a little better career, it'd be like this guy played for that team, not just like many teams and all of that. But I love it. I mean, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. This is great.
Well, we're excited too. And you're an old pal of Sarah Tiana, so maybe you can help us out here. One of our missions, as soon as football season ended, a lot of people stateside get very down in the dumps. Tiana, obviously, one of them, before her beloved spring training could launch in the regular season of baseball and everything. What are we going to do? She wondered aloud. Hockey was the answer. It is the answer. Because she's from Atlanta, we thought the Flames might make some sense for her spiritually, even though they're up in Calgary. She has decided on the LA Kings instead. Maybe you can deepen, further entrench her passion for the great sport of puck.
Well, I mean, the Kings are a good team to follow because if you look at it, so I have a lot of friends that have played there, you know, in past and current. I actually saw the old head coach of the LA Kings, Daryl Sutter, on the weekend, who is, I would say, a legend in LA, or should be, delivered a cup here, a couple cups. So, you know, Todd McLellan, I actually had Todd in the minors years ago, and he was just let go, obviously, and Jim Hiller's taken over. But I have lots of ties to the organization. So the Kings are a good team to watch. And if I feel like it'd be interesting because the NHL trade deadline's in the next couple of days. Friday, and LA probably should be active. You know, if you look at that, they don't have any goalies under contract for next season. So I wonder if they're going to try and grab one at the deadline. You know, Cam Talbot and David Riddick have done a good job, but a lot of people say the Kings might be a goaltender away from doing something special in the playoffs. So LA should be a team to track. The only concern is if LA ends up playing Edmonton. Edmonton just added Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick in a trade here, just as we're talking. And, you know, Edmonton continues to get deeper and they have the Golden Goose in 97 up there. So he's a scary guy to watch. So if LA has to run into him, that might be a concern, but I like the Kings. They're a great organization. Rob Blake is awesome. Luke Robitaille, you go right down, you know, kind of right down the line, that organization, top notch. It's better than the Thrashers because I played against the and that was a mess. I don't know how NHL should go back to Atlanta. And I think they're going to, because it'll work better this time. But that rink was a mess. I don't know if you ever watched a game, the Atlanta Thrashers.
I went to a game there. Yeah, I went to one game there.
It was all luxury boxes on one side. So there was no atmosphere. And probably I have a bad taste in my mouth because I don't think I ever played a good game in Atlanta, which is, you know, as a player, if you have a bad game in a certain rink, you're like, God, I hate that city. God, I hate that rink. And so Atlanta, I never felt like I played well against the Thrashers. And then even going out afterwards, we ended up in like Buckhead and I almost missed the bus the next day. And like, it was Atlanta was a scary city on so many different levels.
Well, I mean, listen, just at the most fundamental level, they named themselves the Thrashers and they had those bizarre costumes. They never had a shot coming out of the gate, right, Tiana?
No, I don't think we had a shot. I don't think at that time, you know, like sports in Atlanta was like, you know, thriving, but it was like so much about football and baseball. And then like the Hawks were just okay. You know, like it was just like a weird time. So I think now, you know, the Atlanta United, the soccer team there is like, it's so huge that I think that like the town is very international now because of it's become this big international hub. And I think more and more sports and the city has grown and there's room for more to grow. But I will say that like, I do have a soft spot in my heart for the Flames because Jamie took me to my very first Flames game ever when he was the goalie coach in Calgary. And that's where how I met him. And so like, I feel like I'll root for the Kings, but if the Flames are there, I will be cheering for them too.
There you go. See, there's nothing wrong with that. Like there's nothing wrong with cheering for multiple teams. You can have like your favorite, but then if your favorite's not getting it done, you can have kind of like a little side favorite. And that's where the Flames should be your side favorite there.
Do you have a favorite? Are you allowed?
No. You know, I always joke. Like I spent 7 years with the Flames organization, 2 tours of duty and then coached in that. So when people are like, oh, you're a Flames fan. I'm like, I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of people in the organization. Technically they paid for my house that I live in, because, you know, stuff like that. But I grew up in Edmonton. And that was in the '80s when they were winning cups. I was never an Oilers fan, but I was a fan of players on the team. So the one thing, and I'm lucky now that I'm in the media, I don't have a favorite team, but I certainly have favorite situations, favorite, you know, players that I root for. Now that I'm older and all of my friends are in management and coaching and stuff, I certainly want them to do well. But the mantra that I've always had in the media is just honesty with respect. So if somebody's great, you give them respect. If they're not, you know, playing well, you say, hey, that person's not playing well. As long as you don't like, you know, take them to woodshed and really like, you know, get personal. I feel like it's fine. You can walk into the dressing room the next day and face these people because athletes are their own worst critics. So I never had a favorite team, but I certainly had favorite players.
I'm going to allow it because as a fan, I think you're a weirdo if you become a professional, if you're talking into a microphone or otherwise, and you didn't grow up rooting for a team, but you're a player. I always say that there's an inverse relationship between the guys who are really good at it care less about rooting for other people to do it. But nerds like me, it's all we have is living vicariously through your greatness. So, yeah,
I understand what you're saying. Like, I'll give you an example of somehow when it was, I probably should have been a fanboy about this, but when I was 12 years old, in between periods, I did a thing called a Dairy Queen shootout. So players would come and shoot on you.
Right.
And if you made the saves, you'd go on to the next round. And I made it all the way to the finals and won. And I was 12 years old and I got a picture with Grant Fear, the Oilers goalie. And he came out and took a picture with me. I was 12. He was like 26 at the time. Fast forward 14 years later, I'm playing with Grant in St. Louis. He's my goalie partner. And somehow the Edmonton paper got a hold of this picture and we're playing Edmonton that night. And on the front cover of the page is just, you know, little me with Grant, and I'm playing with my idol. And it's weird because I'm sitting at the back of the plane having rum with him and he's telling stories of winning Stanley Cups. And I'm like, I was a fan. Here are my idol. And now this guy's like texting me and we're like buddies. So it is weird, but it's a great story because I was a fan of Grant and I got an opportunity to hang out with him. So I was more, it wasn't the team that I loved, but any team that Grant played for, I was pretty fired up about. So you should give me a pass just on the player side. And keep in mind, last thing, goalies are crazy anyways. We're like pitchers.
True.
So,
that's the word.
Everything's off the table at that point.
Hey, no cups or not as many cups up there in Edmonton without Grant Fuhr. And by the way, shout out to Andy Moog and to Billy Ranford as well. All that off. As someone who you know, all these decades in as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, I understand go, go, go offense and ignoring the blue line and between the pipes a little bit there. Boy, I don't want to hijack this, Tiana. We have a lot to talk about, and I want to nerd out on some puck here. I do have to ask this as we jump in, though, because I mentioned the Thrashers, and I mentioned you were on the Minnesota Wild, and you also played on the Islanders, which, you know, what is, I think hockey is home to the worst team names in all of major sports. What the hell goes on? Minnesota Wild? The Predators? Did they just run out of gas 90 seconds into the conversation down in Nashville? Like, we want a fierce beast. Which one should we go with? Let's just go with all of them. Predators. That's it. Like, how late? Minnesota Wild. The Outsides? That's what we're celebrating? That's the team? How say you?
I don't choose the names. And again, I keep coming back to it. It's like at that point in my career, whoever would take me and would pay me, I would be glad and be like, God, I love the Minnesota Wild name. I love it. And it's funny. When I played in St. Louis, I was almost taken in an expansion by Nashville. Actually, our manager, Larry Plow, made a side deal not to take me, which in hindsight, he probably shouldn't have done. I was almost a Nashville Predator. I was in Nashville this like last Tuesday. Now, I don't know if you've been. It's an unbelievable city where I love live music. I like drinking beer. So it goes perfect hand in hand. And then they've got the rink on the strip and you pour out and there's a bar called Tootsie's and you just like, it's basically like everyone calls it Nash Vegas. Like it's the new Vegas where people just go and drink and have a great time. And so the Predators, I never thought about the name of all of these things where I don't know if they let fans do it, but I've never thought about what is the worst name in pro sports as far as the nickname or whatever. I don't know.
Do you think that whenever someone's drafted by the Predators, they should go door to door and introduce themselves and say, hi, I'm a Predator. I'm a new Predator in town.
I think, isn't it like from a legal standpoint, people have to do that if they've been the other side, like if they actually have been like, you know, Predators. Yeah.
They played for the Ducks and it's like something really demoralizing and they're like, I just have to go and like get this off my chest.
See, the Ducks might be a little bit like, but that's tied into the Disney, right?
Wasn't it? I know.
The Ducks.
The Mighty Ducks.
I think it used to be when Anaheim first came into the league, it was Anaheim Mighty Ducks, and then they just dropped it to the Ducks. Mm-hmm. So that might be one that, and I'm calling that game tonight, Ottawa-Anaheim. I'm sure it's on everyone's docket to watch those two teams right now.
You know what? Eddie Spaghetti, who's behind the glass there, he watches it at all. I'm a little more focused. I am obsessing these days about the Pittsburgh Penguins. And by the way, Eddie Spaghetti is on trade watch. Before this episode is out, Jake Guentzel may belong to, I'm not going to call him your Edmonton Oilers, but he may be an Oiler. I don't think that's going to happen after Henrique. He may be a Canuck, though. We will see. Oh, you're looking at it now. I can see eyeballing it. You might let us know something. If you break this trade, it would be kind of fun.
I get insider stuff. So no, Ryan Johansson going back to Philly in the Deshaun Walker trade. So that's an interesting one. LA Kings will place Anderson Dolan and Mo Vert on waivers today. So they're going to be doing something. So I get all these. I get about 300 emails a day and I'm looking. But yes, it's Carrick and Henrique going from Anaheim to the Oilers, and I think a first rounder is involved. But if there's some salary retention, they might have another opportunity at a guy like Gensel. So you're right. Like, I'm focused on Pittsburgh. I know Kyle pretty well, Kyle Dubas, and it's weird because it's almost like the mantra when he signed a 7-year deal there. It was like, okay, the first 2 years, you've got this core that is aging. You're going to try and have to go for it. And then probably in the 5 years afterwards of your deal, you're going to have to rebuild and decide if Sidney wants to stay or not. And Gino and Letang, and you acquire EK65 and Carlson. So it's, they're kind of in the crossroads. I feel bad for them because you missed the playoffs by 1 point where if they beat Chicago, they make the playoffs last year. And instead Florida makes the playoffs and goes to the Stanley Cup final. You think of how crazy that that transaction went down, because if Florida doesn't make the playoffs, they might have had to fire some coaches or have some change there. Instead, they go to the finals. So it's interesting, the game of inches in pro sports.
Wow. I'm curious about that. And I'm sorry, Tiana, I don't mean to hijack things by talking about it. I don't think this is just a provincial concern. I think it's bizarre stuff at a sports global level. I have kind of not laughed about because I'm a great empath, but I have, ruminated on how the Edmonton Oilers could have Draisaitl and McJesus and never come close to a Stanley Cup final. Same as it's the hockey version of the Angels down in Southern California having Trout and Ohtani for a long stretch and never getting close to the baseball postseason. But I legitimately think it's now been trumped by the Pittsburgh Penguins power play of this season. I mean, they have one of the four greatest players in the history of people, one of the 25 greatest forwards in Gino Malkin, a first ballot Hall of Famer in 65 Carlson, another Hall of Famer in Letang, and a generational sniper in Gensel. And it's the 30th power play in the NHL. If it was merely, it wouldn't even, the premise to me, I know we have to move on from it and Gensel's going to get moved because of contractual concerns and age and all of that. And what is on the horizon 2 years from now is another matter. But right now, I cannot fathom that this team doesn't click at a league average rate on the power play. And if they did that, not gargantuan numbers, just merely middle of the pack power play, they would certainly be a power play right now. Explain why it's so bad.
I watched them right at the start of the season. I called an exhibition game of theirs between Ottawa and Pittsburgh, and it was like in Sydney's hometown. So I almost say like there's only one puck. You can't chop it up and let all of these guys use it. So it's almost like the saying, too many cooks in the kitchen. You've got this, all of these generational players, and they've got to find a way to make it work. Adding Erik Karlsson into that mix, it was almost like an embarrassment of riches on the back end. You only need one guy in an umbrella setup on a power play, and now they've had to adjust and have two guys if you're going to have Letang and Karlsson. Both of those guys like to skate the length of the ice. Both of those guys like to drive the bus from the back end. Now it's like they're deferring to each other going, okay, you're going to do it now. I'm going to do it now. Now I'm getting frustrated. You know what? To hell with it. I'll do it. You do it. Like it to me, it's almost like they've got all these pieces, but they haven't fit. They don't fit together on that power play. I watched them live the other night in Calgary.
And that was the killer. By the way, I just have to say all losses are not created equal. And for it to happen in early March, that is going to go down because Gensel's going to get moved in this whole little era within the Crosby, Malkin, Letang era is going to go away because specifically that loss. They hold on to that one. The picture is very different today than it would have been. That was an end of the road kind of loss. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it was a massive one.
No, we call it the dagger. That was the dagger. Watching that game live, Calgary had nothing going on. Pittsburgh was a better team. And then they just couldn't, they let it. You could actually see the air coming out of their balloon in the third period. And then you give up that goal late. And, you know, you need a save. There's a lot of things you can just point to and go, just had a save. If you just had a better power play, if your top players delivered on that particular night, if your depth guys chipped in a little bit, like there's a checklist of things that you need to have success and success sustained on long term. And for me, they haven't checked those boxes, you know, consistently. So that's been the challenge for me with Pittsburgh. And now Kyle's got to get creative, and you're going to move a guy like Gensel out. They might move a couple other pieces. And are you going to try and have a retool on the fly? If Crosby's like, I'm not leaving here, like get me some more players type of thing. Just get a little bit younger. So now, you know, the cupboards are bare because Jimmy Rutherford said, I've been going for it so many years. And now he's moving on to Vancouver. And now they're paying for going in all in at every deadline for how many years now?
Well, I mean, I'm with you 100%. And, you know, to me, the move that I would be looking to make is with all these goalie needy teams out in the Campbell Conference, Tristan Jarry is the guy who has a pretty big cap hit with the depth that they have in the system, the Penguins at goal. I think that's the move that I don't hear a lot about that seems fairly obvious to me. If you're not going to win the cup this year, move Jarry to a contender. He could be the difference for you, whether it's Edmonton or LA or otherwise.
Yeah. The only problem is we've talked about this, and I don't know how it is in other sports, but with the no move clause, like, I don't know if you saw, there was a Tarasenko trade today from Ottawa to Florida. He basically told them, you want to trade me? You're trading me to Florida because my family lives there. So Florida goes, oh, okay. You know, we're not going to, well, we'll give you a third. We'll give you a fourth. Like it's same thing. If Tristan Jarry, I believe he signed a 5-year deal at 5 years this past offseason, right? I believe there's a no move in there or a limited no move. I'd have to pull his contract up. What's happening now, that is the leverage that the players are getting, is that you add in a no move clause. So right away, if you have a 10-team no trade list, a lot of those is like, okay, we're not going to Winnipeg because of the weather. We don't want to be in Ottawa where the rink is so far out and they're still in a rebuild. Buffalo's off the charts for sure because who wants to live in Buffalo, upstate New York, even though a lot of people love it. You know, certain situations, oh, you want to live in Tampa? Yeah, absolutely. Florida, tax-free situation, or not tax-free, but no state tax. Tennessee, Nashville's a destination. Alberta, but it's cold there. You want to move to Edmonton? Well, you got a chance to play with 97, but you got to live in Edmonton. And believe me, I lived in Edmonton. Grew up there. You know, I talked to somebody this morning from Edmonton. I don't know how it translates, but it's minus 30 there right now with the wind. So I don't know what that means. I think at some point they cross over and it's minus 30.
I was going to ask you exactly that question because you obviously were all over from, you know, from Alberta down to South Florida. I mean, if it were not for the salary cap, legitimately, you know, I've said about Denver-based professional teams, shouldn't they dominate more when every broadcast, whether it's hockey, NBA, they was like, hey, the home team, the air's thin up there. You got to get used to that in your first game. Like, well, shouldn't the home team then win all the time? Same thing with Florida. If you're in South Florida, like, you have an inherent advantage. All those Canadian guys and Russian guys, don't they want to live in South Florida? If there weren't for a salary cap, they would be the all-time team. They would win like 20 years in a row, right?
Yes, and I played in Florida, but what happens is you get there and it's like if you're all in at 100% and all of a sudden you wake up and it's, you know, 85 degrees and you're wearing shorts to the rink, maybe it just knocks it down from 100 to like 95 because like 5% is like, I'm going to go sit in Miami Beach or I've got a little bit of distractions here or there. Like everything comes with, I call it like a toll. Like the toll to live in, the cost of living is either good, but living in Florida, there's not a lot of fanfare. There's like two media people that cover you. Like it's, you just go and you live in Florida and you play hockey. It's a great setup. But you play in one of the seven teams in Canada, you're in a fishbowl. But man, you get fanfare, you get a fourth line, a backup goaltender for me in Calgary. I was a popular guy, which is, you know, probably shouldn't be. If I was in LA or I was in, you know, other markets. When I was in Florida, like, you know, try getting a club going, yeah, I'm the Florida Panthers backup goaltender. I'm in Miami Beach. Like, get the hell out of here. You know, like it's stuff like that. Like there's no chance of any cachet when you're walking up to, you know, anything in Florida, flashing a card going, hey, I play in the NHL. They're like, all right, be it, you know.
So, no, NHL in Florida. Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So, come up with better lies.
So those, you're right. In theory, some of those markets are great. I would argue that Vegas has come into that mix as well, with the cost of living there, the organization being all in on winning. Arizona should be the most exciting one, but they're literally playing out of a state university rink right now that seats 4,800 people, which is awful. Like you know, that's kind of junior, that's college. It shouldn't be the NHL. So there is a little bit of work within the NHL to do, but there is some great destinations. And, you know, fortunately I was in a lot of them because I was well-traveled.
You sampled them all. That's nice.
But also you said you were telling me last night that you think that the NHL is going to expand even more. And so which cities do you think are likely to host a new team?
I mean, you're hearing Salt Lake City, you know, which I played in Salt Lake City in the minors a million years ago. And it was really weird because we played out of the same rink that the Utah Jazz were out of. So it was like Malone and Stockton and Malone were like the two big guys. And then we weren't allowed to, like, we were such big pigeons that we were not allowed to, like, interact with the NBA team. So if we literally, our dressing room was beside them, and to get to our dressing room, we weren't allowed to walk by their dressing room. We had to walk all the way around the rink. Like, we're like, stay, like, leave those guys alone. And then, but the city was unique. Like, it was, the bars closed at 1 o'clock. I think it was like a, you know, it was very religious city.
It'll be very interesting to see hockey players try it. They'd have to drink about 200 beers to get drunk in Salt Lake City.
You finish a game at 10 o'clock and the bar's closing at 1. Like, that, you get to the bar and you buy 400 drinks and you leave them on the table. And then they kick you out at 1 o'clock. That's the other thing. So it's almost like a fist fight. You're like, hey, I paid for all those drinks there. We got to get it going. But I think Salt Lake City would be a good city. Houston. And then Atlanta has been brought back into the conversation. And I do believe, and I'm bullish on this, I think hockey would work in Atlanta for all the things that you were talking about, Tiana. Now it's a multi-layer city. It's grown. You know, there's big infrastructure there. I think the rink they'll do the rink better this time. So if I'm looking at expansion, if I had to guess, because you're probably going to expand one in the West, one in the East. The one in the East would be Atlanta. The one in the West, probably from what I'm hearing, would be Salt Lake City. Or there might be a relocation situation I talked about with Arizona. Arizona might relocate to one of these cities just in the interim until they can get it sorted.
By the way, you say, you know, the way you describe professional, the NHL hockey players, it is the, not in my estimation, but the way hockey players talk, it really is like, you guys are the Hawkeye of the Avengers superhero universe. Like, yeah, you're superheroes, but you're not Doctor Strange or Ryan. Yeah. Settle down.
You're not Iron Man.
The bow and arrow guy. Come on. But I don't. I once in Pittsburgh, when John Cullen was ahead of Waino in the points chase in whatever year that was, 92. Would that have been 90? No, yeah, 90-ish. Whenever it was. Mark Recchi and John Cullen came into the bar. Me and my chums were in, and Mark Recchi came up to the bar to get some beers. And my pals and I bought them beers. And we're like, no, these are for you. And he said, no, I haven't even ordered yet. And he said, and we said, yeah, we got these for you. Like, but what do you mean? You paid for them? Like, yeah, we bought you beers. Go get them, Johnny Cullen. Go get Gretzky. Beat them in the boys. Do it for Lemieux and all that. And he was so blown away. Wow, you guys got us beers? That's really, really nice that you did that. That's hockey, guys. Here's my thing. Southern California does not need two NHL teams. The Kings own LA. Move the Ducks up to Portland. Now you have some rivalries, right? Vancouver and Seattle. And all. I mean, that's it. That's where it's at.
Yeah, I agree. But like the Ducks are... Put it this way, it's so big in California, you can have that rivalry. You know what the Ducks need to do is be better, play better. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, be have an organization right now. They're in a retool, rebuild. But when, like, think about it, when California used to be murderer's row. San Jose is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Anaheim won a Stanley Cup. And LA's always been competitive. So as a player going into California, it wasn't a cakewalk. It was the other way.
Yeah.
We're going to California and we're hoping to maybe split. If we can get 3 out of 6 points, we are good. But that's so now it is in a down cycle. So Anaheim's like, okay, geez, they're light years away from being competitive. But it wasn't that long ago. It was Niedermeyer and Pronger and Getzlaff and Perry and depth. And that team was a juggernaut. So going into Anaheim was no cakewalk. I think there's a record still, because I was part of it, playing for the Calgary Flames. We went something crazy, like 16 years, I think, or longer. I think it's 23 years without winning in Anaheim. You go to Anaheim, that's a guaranteed loss. It's just weird. And I know you didn't play them every night, but it's like, you go down to Anaheim, it's like a guaranteed loss. Okay, let's try our luck in LA. So there is that downtrend.
Is it the right same now? is it the same as in the NBA, they talk about the Hollywood flu that you get in between the Lakers and Clippers games that you have when you're playing in Staples Center? I mean, legitimately, I say to my boy, Jean-Claude Van Damischek, when we're going to the Kings game to see them play the Penguins, if it's after they played the Ducks, I'm like, let's keep expectations low. They probably went on a twister last night and they're not going to be in great form tonight.
It's 100%. So you were talking about Florida. You talk about New York, LA, Nashville and Vegas, like some of these destination spots where guys circle on the calendar and go, we're going in there and hockey might get in the way of us having fun. So play the game and get through it. But I was telling a story. I never played guilty. Like, you know, playing guilty is drinking the night before a game. Like, you know, once in a while you have a few drinks, but you dial it back. It's like, okay, you know, we got a game tomorrow. Let's make sure that, you know, we're being professionals because we can go out afterwards. But we were in LA one night and I ended up hooking up with some friends from LA and a couple of the players were with me and we went to a club and then few drinks turn into a few more and then it gets ugly. And I remember being in the Hollywood Hills, sitting at a table of like this movie star's place and drinking Crown Royal out of the bottle at like 5 a.m. And we had a morning skate at 10 and we played that night against the Kings. And it's like, it's fine for me because I'm not starting. There's no problem. Like I'm not playing. Like, so and I remember getting the car home. I made it through morning skate. I slept all afternoon. But it's like one of those ones where you're kind of hungover and you can still, like, I can still taste whiskey at like 5:30 p.m. as I'm putting my gear on and we're playing the Kings that night. So I'm sitting on the bench and we are down like 3-0 early. And a fourth one goes in and the coach is screaming at me. And I'm like painting myself invisible going, yelling at me, like, I'm trying not to look in his direction. He's like, get in there. So I get in there and I'm just like, at that point, you're praying to the hockey gods. Like, just give me one, like, just let me get hit by the puck. And the first shot went in and I'm like, God, this is not going to go well. And somehow, like, I just got struck by lightning and I made a bunch of saves and we ended up coming back and tying the game.
No.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that part.
This is in the era of ties. So we tied the game and, you know, it ended after overtime. There was no shootout. It's like, okay, we tied. So that night we got a point out of it. And I remember jumping on the plane. I think we ended up flying out and I was like, I will never do that again. Now I ended up doing it again, maybe once or twice in my career, but like the guilt that I had and the fear that I had, like the adrenaline in my body going like, I am not drunk, but I am not sober. I'm hungover. I'm still kind of coming out of it. I never did that in my career. And I'm embarrassed to tell this story, but I'm lucky that I got out of it alive. Like basically we didn't lose 12-0 and I embarrassed myself type of thing. So you're talking about.
Yeah. You tied after you tied one on. That's like so impressive. But like,
yeah. But you're superstitious. Like, hockey players are superstitious. Why? Well, I would think that based on that success that you would have to get whiskey drunk again. Keep it up until it it doesn't work, right?
I wasn't a good enough player to ever try that again. Like there were other guys when I knew it's like, okay, that guy, it's funny. I could watch a game back in the day and I could tell you, I'd be like, that guy is sweating out a dozen beer. That guy has been up to no good. Like you could literally watch a broadcast and be like, that guy didn't make it home before 3 a.m. last night. Like you, there's certain guys nowadays, it's so different. Like camera phones, these guys are their own little entity. If you look at them, like after a morning skate, it's protein shake, it's take care of my body, stretch out, it's do all these things where, you know, for us in practice, we'd practice in the morning. It's like, okay, where are we going for lunch? We'd all go for lunch. We'd all go for beers. Like it's just a different game. And I would never compare apples to oranges. I was proud of my career. I was proud of what the game used to be, but you look at it, it's evolved into a different type of game now. So I never criticize it because a lot of these guys are just fine tuned athletes, but there was still a line where I'm like, you got to be able to have fun and enjoy your life. And I don't know if these guys are there yet because a lot of that, they don't allow themselves.
It's like the old days of SNL, you know, like everyone was on drugs and then like these cast members come back and they're like, everyone's drinking green tea and going to bed, you know, and doing yoga, like very different times.
And you feel awkward. Like, I don't want to judge them, but you're like, okay, where's the, I have a buddy who's a songwriter and he was writing a song one time and he showed up with like a big bottle of whiskey and a bag of weed. And he walked in and these guys that he was writing a song with was like, no, we're just kind of hanging here. We got our, you know, coffees and that. And he's like, okay. So he said he handed it off to like one of the crew members and the crew members, they were all having a great time. He's like, I'm in here writing a song with everybody's who haven't chai tea, all of that. So that crossover of old school into the new age.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, speaking of old school, I'd love to get, but I don't want to hold you up any more than we have here. I'd love it if we could push our luck and get you back in a month or so to talk some playoff puck and, you know, best tournament in all of sports and all of that. Quickly, though, throwback, Matt Rempe has kind of returned the NHL on some level to it. I'd love to hear some fight stories, but I'm going to push that to the old school story of Mario Lemieux, the greatest player in the history of people, before training camp every year would stop eating the French fries with his sandwich. That was always like, how do you get ready for the season? Like, not smoke as many nails, and I don't get the French fries when I get my sandwich at the country club. That was legitimate.
That was training back in, that would, in August, you'd like taper down and go, okay, you know, I got to weigh in, I got to do that. Now, I was never good enough to just stop smoking and eating fries. And I would be, you know, you hear stories of guys going on Slim Fast for like the 2 weeks before training camp. They're like just drinking those shakes and not eating at all. I used to bleed myself of like sugar. Like I just, you know, you get to a certain point, it's like, okay, no sugar. Just, I would literally for breakfast, lunch, and dinner eat the same thing. I'm a creature of habit. So I would literally eat two chicken breasts and peas and corn. And I would literally do that for 2 weeks straight and for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it would kind of get me over the edge of leaning out a little bit. So I would be at my playing weight. But it's funny. Nowadays, it's so much different. And yes, we do. I promise me, if you allow me back on, we can talk before the playoffs and we can talk about playoff hockey and fighting. I think Rempe has been a great throwback to the game. I don't know if he can sustain it. He's 21 years old. And the way I'm talking to a lot of tough guys who fought for a living, they're concerned about his technique a little bit. He needs to still learn how to fight at the NHL level because he's taking a lot of hits, which you don't want to do because, you know, you might end up getting one on the button and it could change the course of your health moving forward. So, but he has been good for the game. And yes, Mario Lemieux, I'll tell you a quick story before I go. One time we're playing in the igloo and I'm backing up. And I don't know if you remember, the backup goaltender used to sit by the dressing room. So I never got to sit on the bench because the benches were too small. So I'm sitting in that little alleyway and Mario is putting on a clinic. Like I think he's three goals in.
Is this the Blues game when he goes for five?
No, believe me, I wasn't part of that game, but I was with the Islanders at the time. And I remember sitting there going, I am terrified to go in. And I think Tommy Soderstrom was the goalie. And Mario took a shift that was 3 minutes long. And at one point, we kind of knew each other. And like, he was leaning on the glass during the play. And he looked over and was like, hey, Noodles, how you doing? And I was like, aren't you playing hockey? Like, what are you talking to me? Like, I'm a highly paid spectator at that point. Like, just kind of chilling, like, hey, Noodles, what's going on?
Oh, you might have some Crown Royal on you. Forgive me. I'll skate away then now.
Just trying to stop you, Mario. Just trying to stop you. I don't know. Like, but it was so, he was such an amazing player. Like, he was a cut above everything else. Like, hockey was almost too easy for him. So he was just so casual out on the ice. And I remember, like, because I was such a high anxiety guy, I'm like, what the hell is he talking to me for? I'm not even playing and I'm scared this guy's talking to me during the play. And he's like, hey, what's up? Like, just chatting and leaning on the boards, and then went out, you know, into the neutral zone, made a play. And I think he changed at some point after that 3 minute shift. But God, watching him, it was kind of neat, like seeing up close and personal some of these guys play. But then once you're on the ice against them, you have to shut them down. And it was pretty scary playing against him and Jágr a few nights.
If I had my dream, this would be the first half hour, 40 minutes of a 4 hour epic conversation. Maybe we can do that over Crown Royal at a future date. Homework for your now promised future visit. The two questions that we definitely will have to cover: who would win the all time goon tournament? Ooh, that's a good March Madness thing to figure out. I'm going with Georgie Larocque, but don't answer. You don't answer that, Jamie, till you come back. And then the other one, forget about the Habs and all that junk from, you know, 90 years ago. If the Edmonton Oilers 20 best players of all time played the Pittsburgh Penguins 20 best players of all time, who would win that 7-game series? Don't answer. I already know the answer, but you, well, you're your own man.
I wonder why you know the answer.
The Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, I would love him to be like, you know what? It's actually Edmonton.
Yeah,
like,
that's sure.
I know he's somewhere in his mind. He's got the argument laid out. You've done this argument. You've laid it on paper and going, okay, this goalie is better than this goalie. Brasso's better than Ranford, you know.
No, you got us between. No, you know what? We got the Flower and you got Grant Fear. Those are the two best, I think, right? Unless we go Tommy Brown. These are the decisions that we'll have to make in between now and our next conversation. In the meantime, what a great treat the app.
Frank Pietrangelo or Eddie Mio, like that's what we're dealing with. Wendell Young versus, you know. All right, well, I'll think on those two and I'll have an answer next time I'm on.
Okay, the pee-eating goalie, like he said, goalies are all weird. And he preferred hanging out with Grant Fuhr to Wayne Gretzky. That was his idol, not 99 there. But anyway, check him out on TSN and beyond. Jamie McLennan, what a treat to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Good to see you.
And now a quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There he goes. What do you think, Tiana?
What do I think?
Fun times? Did I nerd out too much? Did I consume too much oxygen? I'm sorry.
No. He has stories for days, and he's a color commentator, so he can talk and talk and talk. My favorite thing about Jamie is that he's taller, like his wingspan is taller than his height. So he's like an anomaly. Like normally that's how tall you are from fingertip to fingertip. And so he's like 5 inches taller, I think, with his wingspan, which is like what made him such a good goalie. But it also makes him give the greatest hugs of all time.
You called your shot on his behalf. You texted me in spaghetti and you said, get ready. This guy is a fountain hose of stories.
Yes. And boy, last night he came to see my show at the Laugh Factory. So we could just like hang out and catch up. So we didn't have to do it over a podcast. And boy, like there were some other comics that Fraser Smith was there who has that podcast with Joe Barton.
I know Fraser Smith, who just went, with Barton. Yes. They do Puck Off together. Right.
So that he was like, what, like just like enamored, you know, like Jamie's telling all these stories because he was just with Gretzky the other night. And then, you know, some of our mutual friends were all at the retirement ceremony in Calgary. And Jamie gave the speech for Mika at the end because like the way that Calgary got in touch with Mika was through Jamie because Mika is like Finnish, I guess, which I always think is like the greatest term ever for someone from Finland. The finish. And so he doesn't like answer his
or
phone.
Predator. Yeah. Or, and then we mentioned Utah.
So
too.
Many words.
Do you know residents of Utah are Utahns? Doesn't that sound like they would be Tom Cruise's friends, like searching outer space?
Utahns. Yeah. I would think they were like
Utes. I'm Utahn level 9 now. Yeah. Utes. I just made it.
Utes guys. That's what they should be called. Utes guys.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So he said that, that Mika like answers his calls and doesn't really ever answer his phone, but he'll answer when Jamie calls. And like Jamie called and was like, hey, the Flames want to retire your number. And he goes, oh, all right, I'll call you in a month. Like, or he said he would answer in a month. So he told Jamie to call him back in a month. And, and like, that's how they organized the whole thing. And then,
So Mika Kiprasov's sweater hanging in your rafters, Calgary, Stampede inhabitants, wouldn't be there if it weren't for Jamie McLennan.
He just is such a gem of a human being and like so kind and generous and, you know,
boy, and his little hockey boy guys is playing are the best, right?
Yeah. His son is playing hockey now and he's a goalie, wants to be a goalie too, but he's also obsessed with the NFL and he has like, you know, it's really cute. So yeah, I'm just really happy for him and all that he has going on and that he's still talking about hockey. Cause
the natural charisma breaks through and all that. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, you could see that why he is where he is and attached to the people he is and doing what he does for a living. All right. Well, listen, I thought it was a gangbusters episode once again. And you know what? It's 2 weeks in a row where we talked some Puck. And that's, I know that maybe stateside, everybody, but maybe you are following Tiana's lead, the personification of new or returning hockey fan. This is the time to do it because the playoffs are nigh for most NHL teams, maybe not mine. Although the final nail has not been hammered just yet. Spaghetti, before we leave, any final trades to announce here?
The big one seems like the Colorado Avalanche are really going for it. And they got Casey Mittelstadt from Buffalo for one of their defensemen, Byram. So they made two trades, made the trade that Jamie announced with the Flyers. So they are really loading up for a really, really the West is going to be a gauntlet with Edmonton making trades. They're going to beat each other up. And that's why I still think the East is going to have the winner because the little more open space, I think, for the Eastern Conference teams. But yeah, this trade deadline the next couple of days should be pretty wild.
I'm going to throw up on you. I'm going to drive to your home and throw up on you if Kyle Dubas dubiously trades Jake Guentzel to the Rags. And that is a rumor out there. I don't believe it, but there's if no that way. Happens, I don't know what.
There's no way. I don't think so. It won't happen. Plus, like the asking price, and he's worth it, but I mean, he's going to be a free agent. So why would you trade a first round pick, your top prospect, and a current roster player for a guy you're going to have only until June if you don't re-sign him? So I don't see that happening. Him trading within the metro.
That's why.
Yeah, but if you miss and then all of a sudden you gutted your team, and I just don't agree with that. I think the Rangers will make some kind of lower top nine forward moves, not a guy like Guentzel, who is great. I would love Guentzel, obviously, but it's not going to happen. But you cannot trade him within division. That makes no sense.
Well, I'm glad at least that your guy Jalen Brunson is not done for the season. I know that a lot of New York sports fans were hanging on the edge of their seat, sweating that one out. So good for Knickerbockers fans and a good episode for all sports fans. Now in your ears, committed to memory, just about except for me to say, go check out all the great episodes available to you on the Extra Points Network. Why? Just this week, we launched Movie Week with Kevin Hench. Great discussion about movies and a really nice, sincerely, a nice honoring of his father who passed away and the significance of sports in our lives and all of that. Great conversation there. But just the tip of the iceberg for you. Go check it out, the Extra Points Network. And with that being said, great thanks once again to Jamie McLennan. We'll leave it there. For Spaghetti, Sarah Tiana. Thanks so much, sports fans. We'll talk to you in a week. It's been a Thin Slice of Heaven.